Hi, guys and girls, and thanks for joining us again today on another Team LRF podcast. Today, I'm joined by another coach and a friend of mine, Vaughan Wilson from VW Physiques. Vaughan, how are you doing, mate?
I'm good, man. Thank you for having me on. How are you?
No, I'm very well. I'm very well. I've been on Vaughan's podcast myself, and it would be a disservice to listeners not to mention that because it's a very good podcast and he has some very good guests on that. Vaughan, how can people find your podcast quickly to start with?
You can go on Apple, Spotify, or YouTube. It's called Give It The Beans With A Z. I actually think you were the first episode I ever done. So, yeah, it's a good advertisement for you because they'll find you straight away.
Oh, awesome. Oh, that's good, man. So today, the reason that I've invited Vaughan onto the podcast is because Vaughan is somebody who I've personally turned to in the past for my own bodybuilding and my own coaching, and always asked Vaughan for a second opinion on my physique when I've been dieting down. He's also somebody who is very up to date and always trying to educate himself on the latest protocols, whether it would be with diet, training, supplementation, enhancement. And we're actually going to speak about some enhancements topics today, which are a little bit more advanced. It's a little bit more than just sort of this is what testosterone does and this is sort of what primobolan does. What we're going to look at is things like growth hormone and insulin. And I've fired Vaughan over some questions prior to this, and we've gone back and forth on a couple of them. And what we're really going to do is try and educate people on the use of these drugs and maybe the safe use of these drugs, because these drugs are still abused. They're still used incorrectly. They're still used by people who shouldn't be using them, who have no right in using them. So we're going to just fire straight off one. If someone was to say the word insulin to you, you know, what is it? What does it do? And really just explain it there from us.
Yeah, plain and simple, it's a hormone released by a pancreas, which is just an organ within the body, and in response to eating. Now, it's particularly involved in transporting that nutrients. What we're more concerned with is glucose into cells. So effectively, we'll eat some form of carbohydrates, we'll have a little bit of a spike in our blood sugar. What insulin is going to do is travel around the body and tell cells, such as muscle or fat cells, to open up, let that glucose in, and then lower our blood sugars back down. And really, without insulin, like our body, like our blood sugar levels would always stay high. And that's not something that you really, really want, because that could stem from the likes of cardiovascular disease. It could lead to potential problems with your vision, with your circulation. I'm sure some of you might know maybe a type 2 diabetic that's maybe had problems with their feet, or maybe they've had to get an amputation or whatnot. But really, I mean, a lot of people describe insulin as one of the most anabolic things out there, when I'd probably argue it's food, but insulin's just the transporter. But really, like, if we think about its use in medicine, you know, someone with type 1 diabetes, they cannot make their own insulin. So what do they need to do? They're going to inject that. And without that, they could go into hypoglycemic shock and die. You might have also been thinking, well, I know someone with type 2 diabetes. Well, that's a bit different. They do produce their own insulin. It's just that they're a little bit, they're not as sensitive to it, so maybe perhaps they'll use drugs like metformin, or maybe perhaps they will use a little bit of insulin to try and help transport their glucose into cells. Not just muscle, but also fat. Now, that's from like a medical standpoint of why it would be used. Now, in the bodybuilding scene, we use this as well. And you might be thinking, Vaughan, well, but if you're not got type 1 or type 2 diabetes, why would you need it? And it's a case of, well, as bodybuilders, we want to control our blood sugars, right? We will eat large amounts of carbohydrates on a day-to-day basis, and our blood sugars, they'll be up and down, up and down. Now, the more we can keep them within a specific range and keep them quite constant, the better that's going to be for us in gaining tissue, but also things like having a bit of a better pump when we're training, driving the glucose into cells. Also then in that post-workout window as well, when we're trying to replenish those stores and recover, using a little bit of insulin can help that as well. So a bit of a long-winded answer, but I thought it was best to cover what it does in medicine, but then also why we'd maybe use that in a bodybuilding type of scene.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the second subject we're going to take into account as well is growth hormone. So And again, if you could explain to listeners sort of what everyone would have heard of growth hormone in some way, shape or form. Not everybody maybe would have heard of insulin, but growth hormone and again, what it is, what it does, and maybe why bodybuilders would use it.
Yeah, so it's a fancy term, is it's a peptide hormone, right? It's secreted by something called the pituitary gland in the brain. And what it does, it pretty much stimulates cell growth and proliferation in all cells throughout the body. On top of that, though, it can also help regulate body composition and carb and fat metabolism. In science, you know, what's it used in the medical world? Mostly to do with, say, muscle wasting disease associated with like your age, your HIV. Someone's maybe got a pituitary tumor, a deficiency in growth hormone. However, as bodybuilders, of course, we use this. And you're thinking, well, Vaughn, why would we use it when it's used for medicine? Now, what growth hormone will do, if we, again, try and just break down the science in layman's terms, alone, growth hormone won't give you much. However, bodybuilders out there know that when we combine growth hormone with anabolic steroids, it has a profound anabolic effect. Now, the actual mechanisms by which it does that are probably largely misunderstood or unclear. However, the theory is, I think it's a pretty profound theory as well, is that we get what's called an insulin growth-like factor secretion when we take growth hormone, or when growth hormone is secreted from the pituitary in the brain. Now, that IGF-1 pretty much manages the effects of growth hormone. Now, when we use anabolics, we have an increase in IGF-1 receptors in our muscle. So we inject growth hormone, we get more IGF-1. From anabolics, we have more IGF-1 receptors. So you can see how the two link to then downregulate to, say, mTOR, a muscle-building pathway as such, to then get this anabolic effect, this sort of growth and proliferation. However, people might want to use it also for its therapeutic effects, you could say, such as if you take growth hormone, your skin quality is going to be better, your hair quality, the benefits on its joint and muscle tissue. With anabolics, we get this profound recovery in muscle, but what we don't get with that is the recovery in the likes of our soft tissue, our joints. So we will get that from the likes of growth hormone. Lastly, we would also say that people would maybe use growth hormone as well for its effects on lipolysis, or a fancy word for fat loss. Now, in a fasted state, the injection of growth hormone or growth hormone production, what that will do is promote fat breakdown, but then also that using that fat as a source of energy. However, if you were to eat straight away, then that effect is somewhat blunted. So this is why I think that you need to do fasted cardio, bro, in the bodybuilding world is about, because that's maybe stemmed from bodybuilders that have used growth hormone, understood a little bit of the science behind, well, actually you need to be fasted for it to, and I'll do my fasted cardio and get that benefit. So again, I hope that answers that. It's used in the medical term, but also, well, why we would use it in bodybuilding. But I think that it's not been looked at enough in the bodybuilding scene to say, like, right, this is the link of what growth and anabolics do together, but the theory behind it seems quite sound.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we say it's a new drug or a newer drug and it's not been studied enough, like, bodybuilding has been around since, you know, the 30s and 40s, and these drugs are only really coming around, maybe insulin a little bit later, actually, really around in the 90s. So really, we've only had about 20 years of them being used properly. So it's difficult to say, right, this is what it does, when, you know, studies will take a long period of time, especially with GH. And you know, I read a lot. I always read a lot from Dorian. And these guys were just only introducing that drug in and around about then, which was, as I said, which was in the 90s. And insulin was used in the 90s, but not as profound as it is now. And again, the type of insulin, which we're going to speak about later, was very different as well. You know, people were very much predominantly NovoRapid, which is fast-acting insulin, rather than sort of slower-acting insulin. And I can speak from personal use when I've used both of these drugs. Like, when, like Vaughn was saying, that you get the soft tissue effect from your GH as well, is when I used anabolics, I felt great, I felt strong, and I was producing some great numbers, but I was getting fucking sore, like really sore, you know, elbows, shoulders, knees were getting really sore. And it's almost like my my joints couldn't catch up with the rate of muscle gain that I had. Is that something that you've experienced as well, Vaughn?
Mate, 100%. The minute that, like, I don't use a whole load of growth. I use two IUs. I very rarely go above it because I feel when I do go above it, and we'll get into the negatives later on, I just get too much of a lower back pump. But I like, my hands get swole. So I kind of go off the two IUs specifically for the benefits of, I've got bad knees anyway. So if I want a bit more support, it would make sense not to use it. And the same with clients as well. Like I very rarely have guys above four IUs maybe. I feel that I had a client this past week. We literally went from two to three. I train legs with him and he showed up and I went, fucking hell, your face is blown up. Just off of what, like one more. But again, he's someone that's trying to push it to a bit more of a higher level. So we kind of got to push that with him a little bit. I wouldn't say three IUs is pushing it by any means, but just in general, I'll only ever use two. And actually, I know I talked about the benefits of fat loss, but I tend to actually pull it out on prep. And I did last year, mainly because it just was making me hold a bit of water. My weight wasn't shifting. And it was kind of like, fuck, if this doesn't shift, I don't think we'll be ready. It was more of like a mental thing. And I think that when you're lean, you don't need as much support, but like you've done before, when you're pushing into the above 120, 125, 130s, and you're heavy and you're carrying around that weight all day, just like fucking something like racking the machine, walking at the gym, every step's harder. So that support I think you get from GH is super important as a bodybuilder for joint health, 100%, or soft tissue health, I should say.
Yeah, no, for sure. And you touched upon that very briefly and about sort of the weight gain during prep. So I actually introduced GH 2 weeks ago and I was down to 109. I introduced GH at 2IU in the morning and 2IU of an evening. I introduced at that level actually because I wanted to see if it was real, because it was a UGL, an underground lab. And I thought, well, if I'm using 0 and go to 4 and I don't get carpal tunnel and I don't gain weight, then it's probably not real. And I actually went from 109 to 112.9. I gained almost 4 kilos, in a space of a week. And I pulled it out because of the same reasons. Like I thought, shit, I'm gaining weight here, I'm getting fat, you know, just like you do on the when you're dieting. But yeah, no, that's a great point as well. It will make you puffy and it will make you swollen a little bit for sure.
Yeah, and I said this to Cal. We didn't use it in 2020. I'd never used it prior to that. I dropped weight super quick, like super, super quick. And then last year, just, it wasn't budging. And I was like, Cal, I'm not one of those clients that fucking would cheat on their diet and not say, like, I'm doing everything to the T. I mean, we got to pull this out. And we pulled it out and literally it just fell off. So I think it's got its place. And I did that with all clients. We got to, like, I want to say 8-9 weeks out, and we just didn't need it. Because their joints felt good anyway, until maybe you would use something like a little bit of Winstrol and it'll feel as good, but it's not something that I tend to use with clients. But yeah, just I feel it's got its place for the first half of a diet. Then the closer you get to the show, it's got to come out because it's just going to blur conditioning as well.
Agreed. Yeah, agreed completely. So yeah, we touched on this very briefly, but you know, when insulin was first introduced and when it was first introduced to me personally, the only insulin that I was aware of was things like NovoRapid. And this was, you know, back in 2014, so what's that now, going to be 7-8 years ago, and that was really the only type of insulin that I was introduced to, is NovoRapid. But now obviously there are different forms of insulin, and there's always been different forms of insulin, but there's more different forms of insulin involved in bodybuilding. And can you explain the different forms of insulin that we've got now?
Yeah, so when you look at the different types of insulin, there's actually, I mean, if in a medical scene, there's like 5 or 6, right? And that goes from rapid, regular, which is still kind of short acting, intermediate, long acting, and ultra long, a combination effectively. But in the bodybuilding world, we're kind of mainly looking at your like NovoRapid or your Lantus, your long acting. And I think that the three types of characteristics that define insulin would be the onset. And by that, I mean, how long does the insulin take to start lowering your blood sugars? Peak time, by that I mean like the time after administration when insulin is its most effective at lowering, you know, your blood glucose. And then the duration, like how long is that insulin going to keep doing it for? So for the most part, most people are going to know about like NovoRapid. Now, that's got an onset of, let's say, 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes. It's going to peak. And by that, we know like the time it's going to be most effective at lowering blood sugar between the sort of 30 and 90 minute window. So if you're eating the big post-workout bowl of Cocoa Pops that we see on Instagram and you finish that and you put your Nova in, 30 to 90 minutes later, that insulin's already starting to bring things down, which of course is what we want as bodybuilders. We know this big post-workout window, anabolic window, blah, blah, blah. That'll stay in your system for roughly 2 to 4 hours. So even though it's peaked at, say, 90 minutes or, say, 60 minutes, it's still in your system for the hour after. So it's still doing its thing. So this is where, if you're going to use it, I would say you'd be really silly not to be checking your blood sugar prior to eating. What's it post-training? But then also, what's it, say, 90 minutes after eating? Post-prandial window, right? I get my clients to do it prior to every meal because, let's face it, as bodybuilders, we kind of eat every 2 hours. There, thereabouts, 90 minutes to 2 hours, it's the same thing. But then, more so, what you've seen the past couple of years is guys using longer-acting insulin. Now, stuff like Lantus has an onset of several hours. However, I would argue that it gets to work a little bit quicker than that, mostly just from doing my own readings based on when I didn't use insulin. I was a bit fatter last year to when I use it now. When I always inject it in the morning, 2 meals, and then train. The second meal now is always like 4.5, whereas last year it'd be bollocks. Well, not bollocks, it'd be like 5.5 to 6. But this effectively has an onset of several hours. It has no peak, and it can have a duration of 24 hours. Now, you're thinking, well, Vaughn, why the hell would you use something like that? Well, we have to think that our pancreas in our body, it secretes its own insulin. So we're not diabetic, so we don't need to say, oh, I'm having 750 grams of carbs, how much insulin do I need? It's a case of, well, your body produces its own, but what you're doing is it's maybe not coping well with the surplus of carbs you're putting in. If you're every day you're putting in 700, 800, some guys go 9,000, it gives it a little bit of a help, right? So if we look at insulin, it's going to dispose of, say, between 1 unit of insulin, 12 to 15 grams of carbohydrates. Diabetics cannot absorb anything. They need to go off of, okay, how many units of insulin? With us, we can't just assume that. So before we would implement anything, I would say, track your blood sugar before every single meal across the day. Do that for a week. See what your readings are like. Then you have some data to work with. We'll get into that, I suppose, in a second. But as I was saying, the reason you would use the Nova, which guys know about, drive that glucose into that, whether it's pre-workout to get a bit more of a pump, post-workout to just get that recovery, the long-acting, so that we're mopping up effectively the residual glucose that's in your blood across the day, that your body's going, I'm pumping out insulin, but at this rate, you know, your blood sugars, they're up here, whereas if we put that Lantus in, maybe they're more in this moderate range. And that's better from a muscle gaining perspective, but also from a not gaining fat, as much fat perspective as well. We will still gain a little bit, of course, but yeah, that's the different types that you'll probably more likely see, whether it's NovoRapid, some people call like Humalog, it's a similar sort of thing, but Lantus is the sort of longer acting one.
Yeah, and I can speak sort of anecdotally a lot on the NovoRapid because I used it for a prolonged period of time, and I worked with probably one of the masters of the NovoRapid, which was Milos, who taught me a lot about the use of insulin, and I would always use it 30 minutes pre, and then I would then shuttle in a little bit more post. And I did get up to higher dosages, like 20 pre, 20 post, and which is probably on the scale of very high, actually more than high. But when I did use it, like, I always felt like my training window was a lot more effective. Like, I felt like when I trained, like, I was getting good pumps, but these pumps went from good to insane. And then when I pushed up dosages even higher, they went to insane to sort of almost unbearable, because of the way that insulin works and the way that it's shuttling those glucose into the muscle. Obviously, I'm not advising doing that. I'm definitely not advising going up to 20 IUs. But at the time, I was 130 kilos. I was using 200 grams of intra workout carbs. I was having a big carb meal pre, a big carb meal post. And I was making sure that all protocols that we were using were dead in line with what obviously Milos suggested. So I can speak anecdotally on the fact that NovoRapid gave me some incredible pumps in the gym, and it was the biggest and strongest I'd ever been. I'm not just putting that down solely to the fact that I was using insulin. I'm putting that down to the fact that I was using insulin, GH, a shed load of food, and also anabolics as well. So it did play a role, but I know that when I introduced insulin, it was I was already on shed loads of foods, anabolics, and GH. It was the icing on the cake for me that took me and took my physique from sort of staying stout at 125 up to the 127s and the 130 at a pretty decent nick as well. What about anecdotally for yourself? On have you used Nova Rapid, and do you find that it has a positive impact on your sessions?
I love it. I actually don't use it pre at the current moment, mostly because I don't feel I've got a need for it. When I look at my blood sugar prior to that second meal at 4.5, I know that when I eat, it'll go up. However, I know I've just injected Lantus a couple hours before that. So I know Lantus is doing its thing to keep my sugars within range. So rather than push that, like when I train sort of after meal two, I use it post. I just have 10 I use at the moment. And that's because when I first introduced it, I used 5 and I was tracking my blood sugars to see what it was doing 90 minutes after or prior to eating the next meal. And it was fine. And then as we pushed up food and I got a little bit heavier and a little bit fatter, we saw that started creeping up a little bit. So it went from, okay, I was going from postprandial, which is 90 minutes after eating, I was sitting at about 5.1, 4.9, looking really good. Add a few kilos, add more food, start to see that creep up, 5.9, 6, 5.8, 6.1, I thought, right, that's okay. Medically, that's absolutely fine. That's brilliant. But for me, I'm like, I want to keep that low fives, high fours. So I just adjusted it, went to 10, did it over a few days, came right back down, and then just messaged Cal, say, hey, just let you know I'm at 10 post IU now because this is what it does to my sugars. However, if I'm training fasted, I'll do the opposite. I'll use Nova pre, because I'll have a lot of intra-workout carbs, 75 to 100 grams, more likely 100, and then I'll inject the Lantus after, just because I want to get that pump. I feel that I would implement it now with clients when I see that pre-workout sort of reading just a little bit higher, but I don't tend to see it that often now because the use of the Lantus. What we need to remember is that my guys and me, we're not taking 200 grams of carbs into workout like you were. Right now I'm taking 50. So you need hypothetically, you needed that to digest 200 grams and get it around the system. Whereas my pre-workout meal is 100, intra is 50, post-workout is maybe 250, but that gap between pre and intra, it's just not needed. So I'm thinking, right, tools in the toolbox. I'm almost 128 now. Maybe when I hold that and push it into 130s, that's when that pre-workout reading is going to not be great. Right, boom. Then go, okay, right, now we're 132. You know what I mean? So, yeah, that's why I think that I try and be, I say, what we do, it might seem a bit crazy to the outside world, but there's always method in the madness and logic behind it. And I just have really pushed home with my guys, like, every time we up food, I'm like, let's check your sugars again. Mm. And they're like, fuck again. And I'm like, well, look, we check it. If you're all right, then we keep going. I was like, but if you're telling me that you want to win a class 2 show, PCA, and then you want to do well in an overall, well, fuck, an extra 1% of anything will give us more benefit over someone else. So, yeah, it's just something I push because it's something that you can't fuck about with.
Yeah, 100%. And again, one of the things, like, for example, like steps, for example, again, I'll relate it to steps, is that we track everything in the day. We track our food. We track our cardio. Not everyone tracks their steps, but steps would be an addition to that. You track that as well. You want to be better, you track a little bit more. If you wanted to be better, why wouldn't you track something that you are in control of? When we're getting our blood work done, we're looking at what we're doing in essence is tracking, because obviously it gives us a reading. So we're tracking how good, where we're at in hemoglobin count, where we're at ALT count, where we're at testosterone, estrogen. We're tracking that all the time. So if we can use a tool which allows us to track even deeper and even harder, why would we not use it?
Yeah, but what you'll get is you'll get a lot of guys currently using it that have never heard of a glucometer or never tracked it before. And I'm like, it's so simple. It's just a wee finger prick. I got one client, and honestly, I had to not have a go at him, but pretty much did for about a month till he eventually then started sending me readings. And I made him bring his glaucoma because he told me he couldn't work it and he kept getting error. And he came to the session and he showed me how he was doing it. I went, that's wrong. And he went, oh, right, I thought it was just broke. Rather than make sure that he put the little bit on the tip of where the blood was and it's dropped, he just dabbed it. And I was like, user error, right? That's why I couldn't get in the readings. But what it then allowed me to see was, okay, this is what your readings are like across the day. Actually, you need to take a bit more. You know, and that was his case. For someone, it might be, actually, you don't need as much. So, yeah, it's just, I think it's really interesting that there's guys out there that maybe don't. I just feel like, just check. And then if you're not going to push your foot up for ages, then you can stop checking, I suppose. Yeah. But if you're going to, like we do, push food up, push drugs up, etc., push things like growth, which have a negative impact on your sugars, which we'll get into, like, you've got to, you know, just be smart about it, I think.
Yeah, for sure. But I bet when you said to him, you can have more, he was happy.
Of course he was.
You can have more drugs. Okay, I'll do it every week now, mate.
Yeah, 100%, man.
You take more drugs, you know what, I'll do that all the time, boy, don't worry. Cool, so now we're going to look at, you know, we looked at different types of insulin. Like, obviously, we know the answer to this question, but in terms of our listeners, one, is there any different types of growth hormone?
There is. And I feel these have kind of come out in the past couple of years to be kind of not shunned, but we'll get into it. So what they're kind of all deemed as, you might say they're growth hormone releasing, GHRH, growth hormone releasing hormone. And its analogues, you've got ghrelin analogues as well. An increase in ghrelin is going to have an increase in growth hormone secretion from the likes of the pituitary gland. We call them growth hormone secretagogues. They're kind of classed under this sort of one name now. Now, we kind of know that they have, their effects are short-lived. What they're going to do, as I said, is they're going to try and stimulate the production of growth hormone from the pituitary or get around it in a different way, as in have an impact on ghrelin, and then ghrelin tells the pituitary, right? However, there's a relatively weak boost in growth hormone exposure from these sort of secretagogues compared with the direct administration of GH. And for example, I think it's GHRP2, ghrelin, yeah, growth hormone peptide 2, that affects ghrelin. Like that specifically, like if you consume carbs or fats around injecting that, you're not going to get anything from it. But then we also think of one of those secretagogues, which is kind of like well-known, NK677. Mm-hmm. People thought, oh, this does the same as growth. And I'm like, well, it has a fucking terrible effect on your blood sugar. I saw it in person from a training partner up here. He took it and his hands swelled up like double the size of what they were. Mm-hmm. But just the horrible impact it has on blood sugar as well. So much worse, like I don't know how much percent worse than what growth does, but so much worse than you would see. So are they used much within the bodybuilding scene? I would say that if you're listening and you've not heard about them, there's probably a reason for that.
Yeah.
If you've heard, oh, well, I know a lot of bodybuilders and big guys take growth hormone. Again, that's the reason that, like, so your growth hormone peptides, your GHRP2s, GHRP6, they're just not as effective. They have this weaker boost, but also the likes of, if you eat around them, then the effect they've got is nil. Whereas if you take something like growth hormone, which its half-life is 4 to 5 hours, so half-life is the time that it's, you know, going to be in your system, that like how long, half of that time it's going to take to get out, with a bit the your back to baseline being hit within, say, 12 to 18. So when you think, well, why do guys split their injections of growth up morning and night? Well, it's just because of the half-life, the time it takes for the drug to get out your system. So in regards to the secretagogues, that's about as much as I would go into, apart from just saying that there's better choices out there. Although you might think, oh, I don't want to inject something into belly fat. Please do, instead of taking MK677 or the peptides, because they won't have as good of effect, in my opinion. Of course, it's just my opinion.
No, but, I agree. Yeah. I agree completely. I you know, in the world of bodybuilding, we try things, and especially as coaches, you know, when there's not a great deal of evidence out there, like people might call that stupid, but we try things to feed back to people. And when I use these peptides, like I got nothing. Like, I mean, I got absolutely nothing apart from a slightly higher blood pressure. Like I got absolutely nothing out of them. And I use GHRP6, GHRP2. I used MK677, for example, because at the time I was really struggling to get food in. And this was one of the drugs to go to increase appetite. And I was like, cool, you know what? I'll give it a go. And I got absolutely nothing out of it, as I said, apart from higher blood pressure and struggling to do my shoelaces up. You know, there wasn't really any positive side effects out of that whatsoever.
Yeah, 100%. And like, although it's still out there and people will try and sell you, I would hope that people listening maybe make a wiser choice. Mm-hmm. And growth might be a bit more expensive. Let's face it, it's not cheap. It's probably one of the more expensive, you know, lucrative drugs on the market, you could say. But in my opinion, I've seen a huge difference in my physique using growth than not. You know, it was always something I was afraid of in the years previous. I was like, it started off with, oh, I don't want to inject, so I'll take Anavar. And I went, oh, okay, I'll inject steroids. And then I was like, I'm never going to take growth hormone, though. And I went, well, I'll try a little bit. I said, I will never, ever take insulin. And now I'm taking Lantus and Nova, on training days. So I've done it. I've been the one that's been the hypocrite, says he would never do something, and now I'm doing it. I just think that having used growth and insulin, I'm bigger and leaner with them both in. When I didn't use insulin last year, I used growth, I was a fat mess. I tell you that. Blood pressure was ridiculously high. You know, it was constantly 145. I was trying to put that down to stress from getting married. No, it's because my blood sugars were shit. I was carrying a fuckload of water. And then the minute that I dropped the growth, dropped the water and got a little bit leaner, I was like, this is okay. Now I know what the problem was. So yeah, I just felt that. Now, being able to control my blood sugars, I'm not lean by any means, but I'm not a fat one to it. So, yeah, from experience, if the finances are available and you're smart about it, it's a wise choice.
Absolutely. And again, you touched on it there. There are phases to these drug uses. Like, there are absolutely phases to these drug uses. I personally didn't use GH and I didn't use insulin until I'd competed 5 times. And that wasn't a number that I'd said, right, I'm going to get to 5 and then I'm going to use these drugs. It was just natural progression. Like from my first show, I did my first cycle. I was like, you know what? I'm going to be competing against guys who are taking gear. I'm going to go down that route. After I did my first cycle was only like Test and Primo. And I was like, you know what? That was really good. And then I was introduced to the harder drugs. And okay, I did some harder drugs now as well. And then I did another show and, you know, people started talking about this stuff like growth hormone. And I was like, oh, well, I don't need it just yet. Like I did a couple more shows and then I introduced growth hormone. And then when I worked with Milos for my last show, I was like, you know what, I'm going to introduce insulin as well. And it was just like, and that natural progression took 5 years and took 5 shows. Mm-hmm. So it took a long time to actually progress from just using a little bit of Primo and a little bit of Test to going into other drugs and then other drugs and other avenues. And I know like people will talk about different growth pathways and it's now sort of advantageous. Not that it's now advantageous. It is advantageous to use different growth pathways, but you don't need a sledgehammer to knock in a now. You know, if you're doing your first show, you can get away with being a natty. You can get away with maybe using a little bit of Test and Primo. You don't need insulin growth hormone, Tren, Anavar, Winstrol, Ephedrine, all of these stuff to just get into that show that in essence you really should be seeing, can I actually just diet for that? That would be my first point of call. If I'm going to do a show, can I actually just diet? Because the drugs are the icing on the cake, but can I actually do the hard work and diet for that?
They are, but as human beings, we want everything now, don't we? Especially,
yeah.
Especially these days, like with how popular bodybuilding's getting, the, oh my God, I want to come back and I want to come back 20 pounds heavier on stage or 25 pounds heavier. I hear that and I say shit like that as well and have done. Whereas now, probably more so since my sons came around, I'm like, right, I need to maybe think about longevity and doing this slower, but we don't think like that. We're very much in the here now, like I won't be a British champ, I'll be British champ next year or the year after, and this is all I'm focused on. And that's cool, but well, I mean, I guess that it hit home when my son was born. I was like, I can't do this forever. This got a timeline and I need to be smart about it. So, yeah, I suppose that's when I saw a little bit of sense. Not meaning that I'm not using anything. Of course I am, and I'm probably using a lot more than ever was. But yeah, I just feel that if you're listening, just remember that, you know, there's a get out card, or they should be in this. In this game, I think, because if you're naive to it, just look at what's happened last year with a lot of the guys at the top level. It was really sad, super sad. Like John Meadows is one of the guys on my podcast, and a huge legend in the sport. So for those things to happen is not cool. But yeah, just something to think about, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think going back to what people would quote unquote the golden era of bodybuilding. You know, Ronnie Coleman, for example, in my opinion, the greatest bodybuilder of all time, didn't win his first Olympia till he was 38. You know, so you look at people like that, and yes, he's a genetic freak, but he got to 300 pounds when he was 38. Dallas McCarver was 25 when he got to 300 pounds. And I remember watching an interview with Ronnie Coleman, who pulls no punches, who said, "I'm not surprised that someone like that passed away. It took me this long to build that much muscle, and he did it in that time." Like, he did all of that in reality, probably he started bodybuilding maybe 17, 18. He did all of that in 7 years, where it took someone like Ronnie Coleman maybe 17 years to do that. Yeah. And Ronnie Coleman obviously is not only a genetic freak, but considered one of the best bodybuilders of all time. So there is definitely health risk to it. I've seen the autopsy of Dallas McCarver. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but on the autopsy of Dallas McCarver, you know, his heart was almost a kilo. It was 900 grams. And your heart is should be around about 300. So introducing these drugs early, and again, I'm not putting that down to what killed him, but doing these things can cause serious, serious health implications. You know, it said the guy's got a heart which is three times the size of a normal heart. That doesn't happen just through bodybuilding, and that doesn't happen just through testosterone. There are obviously other factors which are really causing that issue for sure.
Yeah, 100%. That's where I think I actually went and got an echocardiogram last year just to check. I think it was, again, sun came around and I went, I've been taking drugs for a wee while now and I should probably start having to think about this. And I did, and the girl was like, everything looks fine. And it was kind of like, cool, let's go back and take more Primo. pretty much, game on, here we go. But yeah, just doing it in a little bit of a smarter way from now on, I think.
Yeah, no, for sure. And obviously leads us on to the next question, one sort of, If you have a client come to you and they are thinking about taking these drugs, growth hormone, insulin, when would you entertain that conversation?
I think you need to have, in my opinion, a few years under your belt of drug use. I don't think it's something that you just, in the first year of taking steroids, say, I'm going to jump on growth, I'm going to jump on Slyn. That it's not going to cut it. I would think that I've used anabolic steroids really on and off since I was 21, properly, maybe the past 5 years, maybe a bit longer, actually, maybe 6 years. I only introduced growth hormone last year. In 2020. I'm still thinking we're in 2021. Mm-hmm. And then I only introduced insulin for the first time when I was loading for my shows last year. Mm-hmm. So this has really been my first off-season using insulin, and what a difference it's been in regards to my training, how much bigger I've gotten, how much I've been able to control my blood sugars. So for me, that was 5 years from 2016 to 2021, 5 years until I started using insulin, and 4 years until I started using growth. Now, I don't think there's you must have this amount of years behind you. I think it's got to be, well, what's your goal? How much bigger do you want to get? How much money have you got? Because growth hormones are cheap, right? If you've got disposable income, that's fine. But I suppose when the severity of the goal gets so high that you just know it's going to be needed, like if you say to me, well, Vaughn, in the next 2 years, I want to put on 20 pounds of stage weight, maybe I'm going to get that all from just anabolics. Mm. Or you say, Vaughn, I want to be the British fucking champ of, whether it's, class two or it's classic physique, whatever it is, and I want to do that in this time frame, and you go, we need more tools to work with here. We just need more anabolism. We need, that would be my that's when I would entertain it. But there's been occasions where I've suggested it when someone said to me, like, what's the goal? I literally had a consult with a guy, a call with a client on Monday there. And he said to me, Vaughn, the past 2 years I've kind of dieted and then lockdown's come in and I've never really had a gaining phase. I want to get fucking massive. And, you know, he's never competed before. He wants to compete for the first time, but he's taken drugs for a long time. Mm. And he says, I don't just want to show up and do the numbers. He says, I want to fucking come and I want to dominate. And I go, I said, is it financially feasible to use growth hormone? And he went, yeah, no problem. He's got his own gym. And I went, great. I went, if we're going to use growth hormone, I went, we kind of need to use insulin because you need to control your blood sugar. And he went, that's all right. And I went, cool, order it now. You know, so I wouldn't have suggested that. I mean, he said to me, Vaughn, we've got a year. I'm not like, two stag dudes got cancelled. So when we're ready to start dieting, they've been cancelled because he can't get away, blah, 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 it's all nonsense around the world. And we just went, let's just fucking mutate over the next year. And the implementation of them creates it's just a huge change in someone's physique.
Yeah, no.
Huge change.
And exactly. And like you say, and something that I tell all these athletes that I work with, no matter what level they're at, first timer, beginner, intermediate, pro level, your willingness to sacrifice needs to be equal to your goal. And that's not just in terms of drug use, that's in terms of every aspect of your life, in terms of commitment to the cause, in terms of dedication to the diet, in terms of dedication to training, cardio, so on and so forth. Your commitment needs to be at a level that is equal to your goal, if not above, because we then, for example, then start looking at things like genetics. Like, you might use the same drugs as everybody else, but that person's got better genetics than you and they're going to beat you. So what we need to do is we need to commit even further than that person. So, yeah, if somebody comes to me and they say, I want to be a pro, and, you know, I openly speak about this as well. If someone says, I'm going to be an Olympian in terms of a bikini Olympian, I'm going to be saying to them, you probably are not going to do that naturally. Actually, I take that back. I say, you're definitely not going to do that naturally, because I know, and I've worked with a lot of pro athletes in terms of girls and guys, and none of them are natty. I have one boy who won the natties at the Two Bros, who's going to do his first show at the pro level as a natural athlete. But I've told him categorically that you will be giving up 20 to 30 kilos against the guys that you're competing against. And he was happy with that. And he just wanted to see where he stands as a natural athlete, which is amazing. But in order for him to go to these pro shows and win, there is a very, very strong possibility that he will have to go down the route of anabolics eventually. So, yeah,
I think you're right, and I think we kind of know that as bodybuilders, because like, we don't go to the pub every Friday, Saturday night and get smashed and do lines of coke or ket or whatever. Like, we live a very, what could be seen as a mundane lifestyle. And if you were to say to someone, listen, you push the drugs for the next couple of years, it may be going to knock, you know, six months, a year off your life, but you might win the British title. Fucking give me all the drugs. That's what you're going to hear, because it's to us, that's kind of our thing that matters. So I fully agree, where there's risk, there's reward. But I think that the game, the industry, it's kind of, I kind of sense a change the past couple of years, that we're willing to take risks, but people are now understanding what that does long term. So we kind of go, right, well, I'm going to take a risk for the next, I'm going to push it for the next couple of years. Like, for example, if I want to come back and do a class one PCA show, I know I need to get bigger up top, and I probably need to push a 135, 140 off season. But then I kind of go, well, I don't really want to do that and come back next year. I'd rather just do it in 2 or 3 years and come back then. But if I was hell bent on coming out next year as a class one and doing well, then I'd push things a bit more. It's just deciding when you want to push based on your ultimate goal, isn't it?
100%. I don't know if you've ever seen the study that was done on Olympic athletes, where they surveyed like hundreds of Olympic athletes, and they said to the Olympians, I'm going to give you this tablet. You'll win Olympic gold, but you'll die within 5 years. It was over 50% of people said, I'd take the tablet.
Jesus, man. It just shows you that, like, to those guys and girls, it's everything. It's their whole life. And for as much as like, bodybuilding isn't my whole life, but it's helped to give me the life I live, and I'll be forever grateful for that. But I wouldn't take that risk. I would just say, look, I'm fine in the bleachers, you know, holding up a sign, cheating. You know, I'll take my little Primo, I'll take my test, but I wouldn't take that tablet. But there's some people out there that say, fucking give me two of those tablets.
Yeah. And the thing is, it like, if you look at the mindset of the greatest, and I think, well, we both would accept that we're never going to be Ronnie Coleman. But if you look at the mindset of the greatest, Ronnie Coleman, Michael Jordan, LeBron James, David Beckham, when you're looking at footballers and stuff like that, like these are guys that would probably turn around and say, yeah, give me two of them tablets because I want to be known as the greatest. You know, if people spoke to you about people like, I don't know, Robbie Savage, for example, is a footballer because most people will understand football. Robbie Savage don't go down as a great footballer, you know, but somebody like David Beckham will. And even if he had a spurt of like 2 years, Nicholas Anelka would be a prime example, had a spurt of like 2 years where he was awesome, he will go down as a great footballer. But somebody like Robbie Savage, who had maybe a 10-year career, won't go down as somebody great. And again, if you think in terms of bodybuilding terms, you think of somebody like Nasser El Sombati. Nasser El Sombati obviously recently passed away, was willing to do anything to be the best. I mean, he would have done anything that needed. But you think about the guys who were finishing 9th, 10th and 11th at that time, who were they? We probably couldn't name them, you know, because they're so willing to be the best. And that's what that gold medal is. The gold medal means that you are the best in the world at what you do and they'd be willing to push anything. So, yeah, I know I've digressed a little bit there, but I think that's, you know, that it's important to pin that point under. As I said, that some people are just willing to do anything to be great, and fair play to them as well. No, whatsoever.
100%, man. 100%.
So we talked about all these positive things, Vaughn, that the drugs can give us. You know, incredible pumps, feeling of well-being. You know, almost better quality of life with GH as well. But what we haven't touched upon is the side effects and the negatives of these drugs. Just talk us through a few, and again, I'll give you some personal experience of these drugs as well.
Yeah, I mean, number one, with insulin, if you take too much, you could die. Simple as that. You know, if you get your dosage wrong, you can go into a hypoglycemic shock and die. And I've seen, the coach that works alongside me, Ali Burge, he's definitely not listening to this for this podcast. He's too cool for that, he says. No, I'm just kidding. But he's a type 1 diabetic. And we have worked together since we were like PTs in a pure gym. And I've seen him have 3 or 4 hypos in front of me. And it's kind of scary, man, because he doesn't remember them. But when he's doing it, he's fitting, he's aggressive, he's angry, then the next thing you know, he's crying or whatnot. Now, that's fine because someone's there. We're there, we know what to do, right? We give him a little bit of sugar, blah, blah. Now, if you're in your, you know, you're in your house, your flat, you get it wrong, who's going to save you? No one, right? So I mean, I not mean to sound morbid, I suppose, but yeah, it's a big point that if you get your dosage wrong and you fuck about with this, and you can go on hypo and then die. And if you were like, just for someone out there who's thinking, well, Vaughn, what's a hypo? You know, what are the signs? Well, if you were to perhaps experience a hypo, you'd have blurred vision, be feeling quite weak, maybe trembling, like tingling lips, be sweating a lot. That's when you know it's coming. If you're feeling that, please check your blood sugar. Please have a little bit of carbs. I don't care if you're 2 weeks out. just have some. So that would be the main negative of using insulin. Now, GH itself, I suppose it's not much of a negative, but we should say that it increases blood sugars. Now, it does that because it promotes glycogen breakdown in the body. Glycogen is a stored form of glucose, of sugar in your liver, stored in muscle, et cetera, et cetera. So if we were to take GH on its own, we're getting this increase in blood sugar. Now, we know that increase in blood sugar and them staying elevated, the problems that I mentioned earlier on the podcast, that can come from that. But what you might get is a little bit of insulin resistance, particularly if you are someone that's rather large and have a little bit of body fat. Now, things I mentioned earlier as well, when I go from 2 IUs to 4, like the lower back pumps I get are crippling, absolutely crippling. But also what you might find is you might get a little bit of swelling at the joints. So in the hands is a big one. You can get carpal tunnel syndrome, but let's not forget that growth hormone is something that promotes growth in all tissues in the body. So the irreversible side effects of a bigger jaw, of bigger feet. To go a little bit morbid again, if we have some form of cancerous dormant cell within the body and we put growth hormone in, guess what's going to start to grow? that cell. If we have a benign tumor, which is a non-cancerous tumor within the body, that might start to grow. Now, benign, it doesn't do anything. Well, if it's in a place that affects another organ, such as your windpipe, such as your lungs or whatever, that can cause a problem. So you're maybe going to say, well, Vaughn, how do you know if you've got these things in, you know, what interest? Well, I didn't know. I just thought, let's see. And that sounds really silly to someone out there that hasn't got the goals that I do or wants to take it to the level. But ultimately, I don't think you'll ever know. And I guess that's maybe what played on my mind for so long, why I was sort of almost kind of quote unquote scared of it. But not only that, what you'll hear a lot of is like growth gut, because if everything grows well, you know, then your intestines grow, your stomach grows and whatnot. So you might lose, you know, if say you're a classic guy and you want that tiny, 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 tiny waist, years of slamming GH and Slim and whatnot, that's going to be a bit distended and a bit bigger. You hear about, you know, JP talks about the years of his abuse, and he can't really, you know, control his midsection and whatnot. So you've got, I'm not saying that's a negative, but in a bodybuilding scene, if we're thinking about aesthetics and on stage, I suppose it is a negative. But yeah, there's a lot of things to consider with the use of these drugs, and it's not something that you want to use lightly. This is why I was talking about, you know, hammering home to guys, check your blood sugar, check your blood sugar, check your blood sugar, just to see, because there'll be guys out there that take growth that it doesn't have a huge effect on their blood sugar. Like, I've got one guy, you won't mind me mentioning, Bradley, who he takes a bit of GH, he hits a 4.1 every time he does his sugar. Doesn't matter, any time across the day, he's the only one I've seen it in. I've got other guys, they take 500 grams of carbs and their fucking blood sugars are at 6.2, 6.5. And I'm like, this is, you're just going to get fat soon, you know? So yeah, everyone's different, and how we respond to these drugs is different as well. But I'm sure you've probably felt the crippling lower back pumps, the swelling in the hands as well.
Yeah, man. Like, again, working with Milos, I pushed everything, because again, at the time, during the 2015, 2016 season, I was winning shows as a super heavyweight. And at the time I was saying, well, you know what, the next season I want to go and I'm going to be an IFBB pro. It didn't happen. So at that time I was pushing things, and I pushed up to 10 IUs of GH a day. And this isn't 10 IUs of underground GH. This is 10 IUs of pharmacy, straight out of the pharmacy GH. I know I'm getting a full 10 IUs. And I did that for 6 months, a prolonged 6 months. And my hands, like, I have big hands, and it's because they're so swollen. And the thing is, they've never gone back down. I used to wear hats. I don't know if you remember hats back in the day. They used to have a size on them. You never used to have, like, what they call clip backs or snap backs, aren't they? You never used to be able to get them. Well, you did, but they weren't cool. So I was a cool kid. So I got the one with the size on. And I started at a 7.5, and I finished at an 8. And those were inches. So my skull itself grew 0.5 inch. So, like, again, yes, I was a bit fatter and my head therefore was a bit fatter, but it wasn't to the extent of, like, I've got a fat head. It was the fact that my skull was growing again. And when I came off of the drug, my skull stayed at that size. You know, carpal tunnel was, again, another thing which hit me a lot. And again, although I felt great in the gym, I would get these pumps in my forearms that were just unbearable. And a lot of the time, I potentially had to stop training. So again, it was taking away from one of the main things that I loved doing. I loved training. And it was taking away from it because it was giving me such bad carpal tunnel. The feet issue as well. Like, my feet grew half a size. So although it's not a significant amount, like, but as an adult, your feet shouldn't grow, or you know, they shouldn't really grow that much. But they grew from an 11 to 11.5. So again, using these drugs, I knew that everything was growing, and that's only the things that I could check. Like, I didn't go and get heart scans. I didn't go and get liver and kidney scans. Yes, I went and got some bloods done, but the bloods won't always show up that your pancreas is bigger, or your liver is bigger, or your kidney is bigger. It might show that they're under a bit of stress, but it won't show that they're actually bigger, as in they're actually growing. So, like, again, am I worried or concerned about that? Yeah, you know, I would be lying to say, no, I'm absolutely fine. But I've done it now, and there isn't anything that I can do about changing it. So, those are some of the side effects that I had from GH. I've been into several hypos using Nova Rapid, even like taking precautions of doing like 10 grams of carbs per one IU of Slim, which is like what you would call an almost overkill in an overkill in carbs to Slim ratio. And I remember the girl I was dating at the time, I had a nap and she said, have you had a shower? And I said, no, I've not had a shower. She said, you are like you look like you've come out the shower. Like I'm dripping with sweat because I was going into a hypo. My lips would feel numb and tingly while training. Again, even though I was driving so many carbs in, I was taking all the precautions that I could, I was still going into these hypo shocks. And I remember just feeling that, like, as I said, just dripping with sweat and going into the cupboard and I ate eight consecutive square bars just to make sure that, you know, I was overcompensating my fat in terms of a carb because my blood sugar levels had dropped so low. You know, so that there are these negative side effects that you can feel absolutely. And yeah, those are just some that personally I experienced, as I said, in terms of like my skull growing, my hands growing, my feet growing, carpal tunnel, going into hypos, which raises your anxiety as well, which then makes you even hotter and even sweatier and even more anxious and then just shoots adrenaline as well. So yeah, there were some scarier times when I was using those drugs. But again, like if I go back to that time, I was willing to go through those scary times because I wanted to be the biggest and best super heavyweight out there.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's risk and there's what with comes reward. However, someone that's not into bodybuilding would listen to that and think, you guys are fucking mental, when we kind of go, well, sometimes it happens. And if it did happen, you then think maybe, okay, I just don't need as much. Mm. You know, like, okay, I keep going on hypo. Like I train a type 1 diabetic and he keeps going for a type 1 diabetic. He keeps hitting a 4.1 and it's close to hypo for him. And I keep looking at his Levemir usage, which is long-term active insulin. I'm like, dude, you're 3 kilos down and you've not adjusted your insulin usage. You're moving, you're doing 5 30-minute cardio sessions and a low, you know, and 5 training sessions. Like, you don't need, it was just, he was going 36, 36, 36. I went, drop it by 5 IU, see what happens. Dropped it, faster blood levels come up. I'm like, right, well, there we go. Because we've got the data. So even if you're a bodybuilder and you're using this and you find you get this negative side, you get an hypos, you're probably taking too much or you're not eating enough carbs. I would say you're taking too much. I wouldn't say eat more carbs to offset. Yeah, I'd just say maybe take a bit too much. It's not something that I've experienced like right now, but it's not to say that in the past, like in the future, it could happen. It's just I try and do as best I can to make sure it doesn't. And from that comes from just smart usage and not being for me. I'm probably not willing. I wouldn't probably be willing to push it to 20 IUs. You know, I think the most I'd probably take pre and post for me would be 10. But that's just based on my numbers and how I know my body reacts. You know, someone might take that and instantly hypo and even off the same amount of food because of how much we just dispose of carbs. So yeah, just as I said, it's willing. It's with risk comes reward at times. And unfortunately with something like insulin, it's a big risk at times if we get it wrong.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And the thing is, one of the things I actually learned through working with Milos is not to be a puppet. And that's what I was at the time. I was a puppet. He was pulling the strings and I was the puppet. But obviously he was pulling the strings educatedly and not pulling them stupidly. But you know, it was very much like, right, you do this. And I was like, yeah, no problem. I'll do that. And again, sometimes as bodybuilders, we do get a little bit blindsided by that. We do put the blinkers on and they say, someone says, does do this. If I was in that position now, I would definitely be saying, what health precautions should I be taking to prevent any sort of issues?
Yeah.
Go and check your blood glucose levels.
Yeah, you're right. I have a client, he's well known within Scotland and he wants to come back as a class 2. And literally in his check-in last week, he was like, you know, we were pushing drugs a bit, you know, and increasing his stack. And he went, oh, what about just putting a 5 IU of Slim pre-workout now? And I went, I don't know if we need it. And he went, yeah, but would you always do it anyway? I went, well, no, that's fucking stupid. Like, go to your sugars again, tell me what they're like, and if we need it, we'll use it. And we didn't need it. Yeah. Same guy that I told that he needed a bit more before, wanted to take even more again, because I'd said, yeah, we'll need a bit more. But then in his scenario, I thought, well, actually, nah, you don't need it. Because again, like me, he's taking Lantus in the morning. It's 5 hours later, he's training. Well, the Lantus is doing its thing. You know what I mean? So in that sense, if someone isn't using Lantus and they're only using Nova, okay, I understand. I get it now, why you maybe take a bit more.
Yeah, no, for sure. But as I said, at the time, you're right. Like, I was stupid. I was just a puppet being pulled about. And as I said, when we do get to that level of being a bodybuilder, and I was a decent bodybuilder, and I was a bit like, you know what? I'm willing to be pulled and pushed about. But obviously now I would be saying, right, well, I'm still willing to be pulled and pushed about a little bit, but just tell me what I need to do to be a little bit safer. And that's certainly something that I would be doing. So is there a time when you would never use these drugs?
I mean, my client example with Bradley there, he constantly hits fours, low fours, high threes, whilst on 800 grams of carbs a day. So he's someone that I'm like, you will never need to use insulin in your life. Mm. I mean, because if you do, you're hypo and you could die.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was a chat, like we have a check-in call every week, and it was just something that he completely agreed with as well. I was like, you'll never need to use that. And he was like, yeah, I don't see the point. If you're not going to compete in the bodybuilding scene and you're not trying to be a big dude, why are you using insulin?
Yeah, agreed.
You know, you have a pancreas and it secretes its own insulin and it's fine. So if you're just trying to add a bit of muscle and your goal is not extreme, and you're not trying to be one of the big dudes, you probably don't need it. Like if you're going to be a men's physique athlete in a regional show, probably don't have much need for that at all. If you want to be British champ and you want to be a pro, that's a different story, a different kettle of fish. The GH side of things, again, I think based on its cost, if you don't have a fair bit of disposable income, then you definitely don't need that. However, again, you would argue, well, are you trying to be the biggest dude out there? Or girl, you know, are you trying to be the biggest person out there? If the answer is no, it's probably not needed. It's probably something that's going to cost you a bit of money. But also, do you know of any, you know, perhaps benign tumors in your body at the current moment? Are you aware of any, probably not, but cancerous cells within your body? If that's the case, don't touch it. Don't touch it. You know, if you're thinking, oh, I'll just take GH on its own and I won't take insulin, that's cool. But remember what I said about increasing blood sugars, like insulin resistance, pre-diabetic. It's a spiral. So yeah, I think that there's times that I would definitely not. And that, I hope that gave examples of when, you know, you definitely shouldn't, but then also like the other side of, well, finances side of things as well. You know, like bodybuilding ain't cheap. We know that for sure. And how much money we probably spend on drugs a month, it's probably more than someone pays their mortgage in some occasions, you know, but we're willing to do that. And if you're just average gym goer, you probably don't even want to, you can listen to this, but it's probably not wise to go out and start smashing it, because you probably don't need it.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, like I said at the start of the podcast, there's no need to knock an owl with a sledgehammer, you know what I mean? Like, and I see that happen so often, and I really do see it so happen. Like I as I said, I always use myself as the easiest example, because it's always, you know, I am the easiest example to talk about. I got to a physique where I was 105 kilos on stage, pretty pilled, and 120 kilos in the off season, pretty big, without using any of those drugs. You know, I was just using anabolics. And okay, yeah, people will argue, well, maybe you had a good set of genetics, or maybe I did, but you don't know until you actually put the 5 or 6 years or 10 years in whether you could get there without those drugs as well. And those drugs might speed up the process, yes, but it's only worth speeding up the process if you want to go above and, you know, above and beyond that sort of goal and limit.
It's funny you say that, because before I put growth hormone in, I was 120 and my stage weight was 102.
Yeah.
And to take it to the next level, I said I want to be 130. Well, Cal was like, well, you're probably going to use GH. And then this year it was a case of, well, I don't want to be a fat 130, so probably going to need a little bit of insulin as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, mate, I fully agree. But it was just really interesting. We're almost similar height, so really interesting that we both got to a certain off-season weight without that. And let's face it, 120 kilos walking about in any average gym, that's, you're a big dude.
Yeah.
Simple as that. So if you're not going to step on stage, then what's the need?
No, for sure. Completely agree. And if, for example, somebody listens to this podcast and they say, well, you know what, I want to start going down the route of these drugs, and they don't have a coach, or maybe they can't afford a coach. Maybe if they can't afford a coach, they can't afford GH as well. But if they can't afford a coach, or maybe their coach isn't educated enough on these side of things, would there be a safe starting protocol?
Yeah, I think there would. And if you're considering GH, I mean, everything obviously we speak about is in the hypothetical, but I'm currently using 2IU, and I personally don't go above that because I just don't like it affects my training. My face looks like a sort of fat bastard. I just, you know, not as appealing to my wife. But I don't feel great off of a bit more than that. So if you're going to go into that, I mean, there's some coaches out there. I know they're well-educated coaches. And if we're speaking about males and females, that females out there are taking 1IU for the most part across the year. But someone might hear me say, oh, 2IU and go, oh, that's fucking nothing. Just take 4. And I'd be like, well, why? What's the need? You know, more is not always better. It might be better for someone that's wanting to put on a bit more size and quickly in a year. But if there was a safe start point, you would say 2. But then I would add on top of that, at the same time, please check your blood sugar, because it'll negatively impact it if it's used on its own. And then that's where you're probably drawing the conversation move on. What about insulin? Well, I'd say, well, before that, have a look at metformin as a drug as well, which is going to help improve your insulin sensitivity. I use metformin, which I probably actually needed a bit more than that in after 2020 competing. But I think if you're going to think about using insulin, I'd start with Lantus. It's probably the safer of the two, and then the sort of fast versus long. Why? Because it's not got a necessarily peak. It takes several hours to get into your system. However, remember that one unit of insulin is going to dispose of, let's say, 12 to 15 grams of carbs. I'll always think that it does sort of more rather than less. So then I'll not use kind of quite as much, in my opinion. And I think that if you're going to come to me on 350, 400 gram of carb and say you're going to use insulin, I'm going to say, well, you probably don't need that. Mm-hmm. You know, check your blood sugars and you'll be totally fine. But if you're in the upper echelons of, say, 600 gram of carb and or more, like something like 15 to 20 IUs, hypothetically, first thing in the morning with meal one would be fine. Now remember, 15 to 20 IUs, that's going to dispose of anywhere between 225 to 300 grams of carbs across the day. And you're thinking, well, but Vaughn, but I'm eating 600. I'm saying, well, yeah, you've got a pancreas and it's producing its own insulin, so you don't need to cover everything. If you can go hypo. But the safest way, I think, would be to check. And it's something I've stood by, I've said multiple times on here, but with clients, I'm like, there's a tool we can use, but we must be really vigilant with our monitoring. And then every time you make a food increase, check. Because let's say you start at 600 and you're using 15, but you're 3 months, 4 months down the line, you're on 800 gram of carb. I guarantee your sugars are way higher than they were when you were back at 600. So actually, maybe you needed a little bit more there. Or maybe you look at it and you go, actually, they're the same apart from that post-workout to then post-workout meal. Okay, I maybe use a little bit of Nova there.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And then that's where you could say, well, okay, with Nova, I'll start. I'll start with 5. And I'll see what that does. You know, guys are too keen to say, oh, I'll try 5 one day, I tried 10 the other, and I tried 15. I'm like, you're a fucking idiot. Just try 5, track it for a fucking week, see what it does. And if you're fine, cool, leave it there. And then just adjust to kind of what you see. There might come a time where you want to push the growth. When you do, you're probably going to see a negative impact on your blood sugar. So, yeah, I think the safest way would be to work with a coach that has that education out there, that's not just, as you said, being the puppet, which I think that, you know, having been through it yourself, you now probably will never ever want that for a client or someone in the industry, so you'll not promote it. But I think if you don't know much about them, please don't use them. You know, please educate yourself, speak to someone out there, a fitness professional or someone out there that's willing to give you knowledge or whatnot before you think about it. Because if you get it wrong with something like insulin, you can go into shock and perhaps die. If you get it wrong with GH, you could just be a big watery, bloated mess. That's not, you know what I mean? So, yeah, that's kind of, I guess, my two cents on it all.
No, absolutely. And Joyce, I couldn't agree more to all those points. And to be honest, thinking about it, I couldn't add anything more to that, because I think that's a a very good summary about sort of where would be a starting point for somebody and sort of why also you wouldn't use it. And as I said, and I think that why you wouldn't use it has got to be question number one. Why I wouldn't use it is because I don't want to be the biggest guy in the gym. I don't really want to compete. I don't really want to be a super heavyweight bodybuilder. I don't want to be a heavyweight bodybuilder, maybe for somebody a little bit shorter. So should I use it? No, there's no real need. I'm going to get just what I need to achieve just by trickling in a little bit of anabolics, following my diet, training hard, and achieving my goal from there, rather than, like I said, smashing in that tiny now with a big old sledgehammer and just fucking yourself up.
Yeah, I like that analogy. I'm going to start using it.
Yeah, I don't know where I heard it from. I don't know where I heard it from, but I'm sure I definitely can't claim it anyway. Let's put it that way. It's definitely from somebody else.
If I put it on Instagram, I'll tag you in and give you credit.
Oh, yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. Vaughn, thanks ever so much, buddy. Just very, very quickly, where can people find you, follow you, contact you? And if they do want to find out a little bit more about this and pay you for your services, how can they get a hold of you?
Just on Instagram, it would be at VW Physique or website vwphysique.com. The DMs are always open. You know, I love speaking about this stuff. So if there's anything from this podcast you want sort of cleared up, more than happy to answer questions. Or, you know, if you think, Vaughn, you speak a lot of fucking shite and I hate you, listen, feel free. The DMs are open. You just get a big old block and a delete. But yeah, so that's where you can find me. And as I said, more than happy to answer any questions.
Sure. And I don't ever shout out people who I don't truly believe in, and I would never advocate anybody who I don't truly believe in. And Vaughn is on this podcast because I do respect his opinion. I do turn to him. I only messaged him a few days ago and asked him a couple of questions. He was looking after my physique when I was dieting down. So Vaughn is somebody who I trust as I would consider one of the better coaches around. And Vaughn is definitely in that period where he's growing and growing and growing. And within a couple of years, he will be at the level which, you know, all these top coaches are at and producing results. So, you know, if you are looking for somebody to help you, Vaughn will be one of those people that I would definitely look at and turn to.
Thank you, man. As I've always said, that means a heck of a lot coming from yourself. And it's awesome to be on this podcast, to be part of the Complete Strength brand. It's a privilege. I remember when you reached out and asked, I was quite taken aback, and to still be part of that and to be speaking with yourself and whatnot, and then speaking about these sort of topics and to hear those words is flattering, dude. It's awesome. And I'm just very humbled to be part of the bodybuilding scene within the UK and just work with guys like yourself. And when we go to shows, it's great that everyone's mates and we have a bit of banter and whatnot, and maybe wind each other up in the right way. But yeah, thank you for having me on, man. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome. Take care, everyone. Thank you very much.
See you, man.